keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning back in, and I'm really happy to be back. We got a great show in store for you tonight. Crazy weekend. Politically speaking, even The Intercept called it one of the most bizarre weekends in American political history. So, you know, that's something to, you know, it really says something, I guess you could say. You know, it's really starting to get a little crazy out there, a little scary, I guess you could say. I mean, I don't know what to make of it. We're going to take a few calls later on in the program, so maybe some of our audience has some input on what's going on out there, because I really don't know what to make of it. I'm so far disconnected over here in California because the whole election thing hasn't really reached us over here, but we are going to be taking some callers. If you want to call in, 718-717-8296. If you do get on the line, make sure you keep your microphone muted, your radio turned off, and when we are ready for you, we'll go to you by your area code. So we'll say, hey, caller from 718. You're on the Anti-Media Radio, we'll ask you a question, or we'll ask you to chime in, or we'll let you ask us a question. Either way, we'll let you know. So if you do call in, make sure you mute up, and we'll be good to go. If you call in, you get on the line, and we hang up on you, well, it's because you're not muting. So just so you know what's going on. Anyway, make sure you join us 5 days a week here on UCY.TV or on the antimedia.org/radio, and then you can catch us. If you miss any of our shows, you can catch us on YouTube as well. Because we're uploading everything that we do over onto YouTube so that everybody can keep track and everyone can stay up to date. Keep in mind that, like, sometimes we're talking about stuff from the last show that we talked about, or a show from last week or last month. So it is kind of important to keep up to date with all the shows that we have going on, and to hear out all of the discussions that we have, the guests that we have on the show. We have a lot of awesome guests. We're going to be having a couple guests on Wednesday night, and we're here Monday and Wednesday. Anyway, with all that stuff aside, let me introduce my panel tonight. We got my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz, on the line. What's up, DB?
Not much, Nick. I mean, it's kind of telling that same kind of things happened in Chicago in 68, right? Now they're starting up again already.
Yeah, it's already starting. I mean, and back then it was riots. And so, you know, what are we going to expect this year? I mean, we got some major headwinds. You got the Bernie Sanders people, which are probably going to be disappointed with their outcome. You got the Trump people that are obviously angry people. And that they're not happy even at the current moment when their guy is winning. If the Republican Party decides that they're going to take the election away from Trump, just imagine what those people are going to be what they're going to be thinking about. And then you got the counter protesters, the protesters over at the Trump, against the Trump camp. And, you know, this is
you mean normal people, Nick?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You know, it's going to be really, really interesting to see how this plays out. I think the RNC is gonna have its hands full over at the convention. I heard that what city is it going to be in this year? I think Cleveland. I think they said.
Yeah, Cleveland.
And
yeah, that makes sense.
They're already buying the cops in Cleveland are already getting riot gear right now. I mean, and we're talking about this thing is not. The convention is not for another couple months, and they're already gearing up with riot gear and stuff. So they're expecting something big to happen. So we're gonna have to keep an eye on that and see where that goes. Let me introduce the rest of our panel here. We've got the awesome journalist Claire Bernish. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's up?
Hanging in there. So Claire, we've got a new project launching that you're kind of taking the lead on with the anti-media. It's called undergroundreporter.org, and that's going to be, you should start seeing some stuff tomorrow, later on in the week, and as the month goes on, there's going to be more and more going on. Can you tell our audience a little bit about what we're going to be doing with the Underground Reporter?
We would like to reach a broad audience and, you know, try to, as someone put it, make activists out of people without even having them realize what's going on, you know, have them care about events without being too controversial and just kind of more like an informational site with a positive twist. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, you know, we're launching this project. You know, everyone listening tonight knows the anti-media. We're an attack dog journalism outfit. We're constantly going after politicians. We're not very rarely praising any politicians. And, you know, the anti-media, it's the anti-media. You know what I mean? We're going at them. So we got this Underground Reporter project so that we can reach out to maybe a audience that isn't as already aware of what's going on, because most of the people listening in tonight are kind of already aware of things. So we're just here to help digest all this information and that kind of thing. So with the Underground Reporter, we're hoping to reach new people, that people that aren't aware of what's going on, with a little more of a neutral message, neutral aim, and then bring this message that, you know, things aren't right and things need to be worked on, and maybe even a brighter side of what's going on, because there's a lot of people out there doing really good work too, and it's not all bad. You know, there's a bunch of great things going on. Look at what happened in Chicago with Trump's rally being shut down. I mean, call it what you want. I'm of the school of thought that, you know, when people are going to be out there spreading hate, the shit needs to be shut down. You know what I mean? I don't care. To me, that is not, you know, Trump still could have shown up and dealt with it. But, you know, the thing about free speech is that it's free speech, but it's got consequences. You know what I mean? People are going to have consequences for the things they say. Trump's out there stirring up a bunch of xenophobia and a bunch of hate. Well, guess what? His people are going to act crazy. There's going to be counter protesters. I mean, this thing is turning into a real circus. Claire, you actually went to a Trump rally recently in Ohio, and I know you've got a lot to say about that. So let's talk a little bit about that first, and then we'll cover a few other political things that went on over the weekend.
Okay, I'll say this. I went like purely as kind of a neutral party because I have a lot of tattoos and stuff. I already look kind of controversial, so I didn't want to start anything. I just wanted to see what the atmosphere was really like for myself. And in line waiting to get in, which was hours, the people almost seemed normal, like very, very misguided, but almost like normal, you know, not angry people. And then after waiting for Trump to finally arrive, which he was late, and when he finally came in there and like got up on the dais, it was palpable. You could feel the difference in the air. It just, everything turned dark. And, you know, I was just filming, and I filmed one protester being kicked out. And as I was following behind the cops and the Secret Service with this guy being kicked out, you know, some people saw me and they're like, oh, that must be one of his buddies. And they started kind of shoving me around a little bit. And I'm like, wow, this is really something else. Because I didn't say anything negative or anything the whole time. So I heard the comparisons to like a fascist leader and stuff. And I wasn't sure about them until I actually went and attended the rally. And now I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and that's kind of something that Scott was talking about when he went as well, you know, that it really is reminiscent of 1930s Germany. You know, it's a very, very scary thought.
You know, on that note, too, I should also say this, I guess, was the second time he's had people raise their hand to pledge to vote for him. And he didn't say to, like, salute to vote for him or anything like that. But people, instead of raising their hands in, like, a pledge sign, really did kind of do the kind of Hitler salute. It was just, I mean, it was so uncomfortable.
So he did the pledge while you were there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I got that on tape.
Many people are talking about how that pledge is very Nazi-like, and I can't disagree with that. It really does.
Well, I thought it might have been overblown before I actually saw it, but the way that people did it, I mean, it was on purpose. I know that it was. So.
Yeah, and there was a photo that came out. I'm over here on The Intercept right now, referencing this article here. The title is, "Was This the Strangest Weekend in American Political History?" And, you know, this is from The Intercept. These are the people that have been working with Snowden, and this is Glenn Greenwald's website, and it's controversial on its own. But they listed off a couple things here. One of the things here that we have is a photo that went viral on Twitter was a woman at a Trump rally wearing a Trump shirt, and she literally was doing the Hail Hitler salute. And apparently she actually said, "Hail to the German Reich." In an interview she gave with the Chicago Tribune, she actually admitted to it. Trump's people kind of called her a Bernie Sanders plant. That was debunked. You know, it really was a really crazy weekend. The other thing that happened, I can't remember where this one was at, but some guy like jumped one of the barricades and was running at Trump, and Trump almost knocked over the podium because he got so scared, and then the Secret Service rushed in, tackled the guy, made a wall around Trump.
Yeah, I was there for that. That happened at the rally I went to in Dayton.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the guy's the ultimate paper tiger.
Yeah. And then Trump tried to claim the guy was a member of ISIS or connected to ISIS somehow. That was also debunked. You know, but yeah, I don't think that Trump people have any, they don't really care about the facts, you know what I mean? And so Trump's got his support and they don't care about the facts. They don't care about what he says. You know, this is the same guy that has said that he can go in on Fifth Avenue in New York and shoot somebody and they'd still vote for him. And he's right. He's right. You know what I mean? This is just insane. You know, so the whole Trump thing, it's becoming a big time phenomenon. I think the violence factor, the hate, the whatever it is going on over there, it is getting really scary. Claire, I mean, is there any bigger implications you see here with the way these people are acting at the Trump rallies?
Yeah, I really do. And I know that, you know, there are people on both sides. There are people who are kind of, you know, they're justifiably frightened at what he represents. And there are people who are saying, "Oh, it's no big deal. Don't worry about it." And I would say after being in that atmosphere, he's not to be taken as a joke. This can't be taken as a joke, because even if he is not necessarily that hateful of a person on his own, which people keep saying, he feeds off of his followers. He feeds them with his demagoguery, and then they feed off of that. And his obvious narcissism gets boosted by all this positive response, and he just goes nuts. And so he's totally unpredictable. And when you have this kind of power-hungry, authoritarian narcissist and, you know, all these followers, I mean, that's just a really dangerous situation.
And he didn't even come up here, Nick. He didn't even do a rally up here. So he's targeting, you know, economically hard-hit places where people are looking for scapegoats. And he's targeting the, like he likes to call them, poorly educated voters.
He is. He really is. Now, again, we've talked about this multiple shows, and again, this is where it comes in, where we talked about following all of our other shows as well, because we've been talking about this as an ongoing theme here for the past couple weeks, is why Trump is gaining all this momentum, and why is he doing so well, you know, and... As DB was saying, you know, he's targeting these really hard economically hit areas in the Rust Belt, places that used to be manufacturing hubs that all the jobs have like fled to China or have gone to NAFTA countries and things like that. And he's really tapping into the same angst that Bernie Sanders is tapping into. It's the white, middle, and working class people that have seen their standard of living eroded over the Bush and Obama administrations, and they're looking for answers. You know, and I think part of what Trump has been saying, going against free trade and the NAFTA, the TPP, and all that, on that aspect, he's actually on a you know, talking somewhat of common sense there, and I think Bernie Sanders is on that same tapping into that same vein economically. And now Hillary Clinton obviously has found out that that's a popular thing to do this election, and now so she's changed her tune on the TPP. Formerly, you know, Hillary Clinton has said the TPP is like the gold standard of trade deals, and now all of a sudden she's against it because she's realizing that it's not popular to, you know, have that stance anymore. You know, and so
too bad she already sold the uranium rights to the Russians.
Yeah, I mean, she's been, you know, she was, we can't hold her too high of a fault when it comes to what her husband did and stuff. But, you know, I didn't see her being vocal against NAFTA. NAFTA was signed by Bill Clinton, and it was supported pretty much bipartisan support. And so there's that. And then she was a huge advocate of the TPP while she was in the Obama administration. And now all of a sudden she realized it's unpopular, and she's like, oh, well, now I'm against the TPP. So that, you know, just another reason why people don't believe what Hillary Clinton has to say. She changes her tune, whatever becomes politically convenient, she changes her support for it. And, you know, that's just the way she's been working. But back to this economic theme, you know, this is why people are wondering, and all these pundits and all these other politicians, all these assholes on TV are like, oh, we don't know. You know, we're tired of Trump appealing to the lowest common denominator, and they're denouncing Trump. They're the ones that delivered us Trump, you know, by giving us these disastrous policies, by allowing Wall Street to run rampant, by allowing corporations to hijack the entire political system, bailing out Wall Street, leaving the manufacturing center of the United States out to dry during the 2008-2009 crisis. I mean, there's no denying that. We've talked about this before. And actually, this has been one of the talking points that Hillary Clinton has been using recently against Bernie Sanders is like, well, he voted against the bailout, but you know, the bailout also bailed out Detroit. It also bailed out the automakers, and that's kind of true. But the thing that Hillary Clinton fails to mention, and this is why she lost Michigan, is that bailout did not bail out the workers of Detroit and the workers of the auto industry. Obviously, if you look at Detroit right now, it's probably it's the city that's probably in the worst economic shape in the country out of the big cities. You know, it's declared bankruptcy, and you know, obviously the bailout didn't work for the people of Detroit. That's why Detroit is so messed up. Hillary Clinton's out there saying, oh, well, Bernie Sanders voted against the bailout. Well, yeah, the bailout didn't help any of the working people. It bailed out the companies only. It bailed out GM, bailed out Chrysler. You know, Ford didn't need the bailout because they saw it coming. You know, that's a whole different story. But the companies got bailed out with billions and billions of dollars. And the working people and Claire, one of our mutual friends was actually telling us about that, who lives and grew up in the area near Detroit, about the pensioners and the workers that worked in the auto industry their whole lives and retired. And they all got screwed too. Like, they got screwed out of their retirement after the bailouts. Like, they weren't saved. They weren't bailed out. You know, and so this is one of the messages, the tack lines that Hillary Clinton was using against Bernie Sanders, and it fell flat because everyone there, it's easy to say, oh, the bailouts worked, they saved all the jobs, but the people that actually held those jobs, they know better, and they know it was bullshit, and that's why she lost Michigan. You know, and so Hillary Clinton has been on this crazy warpath, and she's been lying out of her ass, basically. I got a clip here that I want to play. Another attack line she used against Bernie Sanders that I'm going to play real quick. Give me a second. I'm going to load this clip up.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, here's the clip.
We're going to pull together and stand up against those powerful forces. And I always get a little chuckle when talking about doing it. Well, I don't know where he was when I was trying to get health care in 93 and 94. I'm very grateful for the leadership that many people are giving to this great reform effort. And I'm grateful that Congressman Sanders will join us today from Vermont. We're going to
So, you know, that's just another clip where Hillary is basically trying to attack Bernie Sanders by saying that, you know, I don't know where he was in the 90s when I was trying to pass healthcare reform and stuff. And this went big over the weekend. He was literally standing right behind her in the 90s. I'm sure everybody saw this photo and the clip came out. She actually mentions him by name back when he was still a congressman. And so, like, all of these attacks that she's doing, most of them are, like, deceitful. And they're just insincere, you know. They're not sincere, and she is just these attacks. I feel like they're falling. They're many times they're backfiring. She also over the weekend was praising what's her first name? Nancy Reagan, I guess. I don't even know her first name. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you got it right.
She was praising Nancy Reagan for like combating AIDS and stuff, and it's like apparently the Reagans were like making fun of people that had AIDS, or their spokespeople were making fun of people. I mean, and then she had to walk back and apologize for her statements and all this stuff. I mean, Clinton is just like grasping at straws here. I mean, this is getting to the point where like everything she's saying is like almost completely false. Have you guys noticed this?
Oh yeah,
it's horrifying because she's gonna have the keys to nuclear missiles.
Let's hope not. Let's hope not. And as much as I've railed against Trump and against Bernie Sanders and against all these candidates, I truly, truly think if you look, let's take an example here. And this is the quagmire that we're in. And I want to get your guys' opinion on this. if you look at what Trump's already dealing with as far as opposition, right? He can't even go give a speech without being opposed by groups and activists and protesters and NGOs or whatever nonprofits are out there opposing him already. Now think about this, and Trump gets into office, does it like barring the possibility that he goes full on fascist, he's got like brown shirts and SS and he's like doing all this Nazi shit. Barring that, looking at a Trump presidency, I mean, he's going to be like Bush at the end of his term. It's going to be like he's not going to be able to do anything without people going out into the streets and just being crazy about it.
I'm on the phone.
Caller from 336, can you please mute your phone? And we'll come to you in a few minutes, okay?
Okay.
So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we have this kind of quagmire here where it's like, you know, if Trump does get elected, it's like he's not really going to be able to get shit done. Like, he's not going to be able to move forward on his agenda. The Democrats will be, like, existentially opposed to him. Even the Republican establishment, all the congressmen and all that probably won't buy into much of what he's trying to do unless he's trying to start a new war overseas, which it almost seems like because he doesn't want to do that, that's why they're not supporting him, you know. And so it's
the military is not going to support him, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, I know, and so it's a very interesting phenomenon that we're dealing with here. But I'll tell you what does frighten me a lot is Hillary Clinton becoming the president, because she's not like Trump. She won't have any opposition, just like Obama, how he gets away with bombing 150 people in Somalia, overthrowing the government of Libya, going back into Iraq, not ending the war in Afghanistan, supporting regime change in Syria. There was no opposition to that because Obama comes off as this Democrat, as like this anti-war kind of guy. It's like even Obama's wars are like anti-war. You know what I mean? It's like, what the hell? You know, it's like the anti-war movement disappeared when Obama was elected. And I think the same thing would happen with Hillary Clinton. And that's what to me is more frightening, is that Hillary Clinton gets elected and she's able to do all this shit that her handlers, you know, whether it's Henry Kissinger or whether it's, you know, the Council of Foreign Relations. I mean, you name it. I mean, she's in bed with the worst of the worst: Wall Street, the insurance companies, Big Pharma. I mean, all of them. She's in bed with all of them.
We may have the first open corporate war if she were to get in.
I think that Trump is kind of like the in-your-face fascist, and she's kind of the sneaky, covert, you know, kind of slimy fascist. That's my take.
Do y'all think Donald Trump will build a wall over Mexico?
So I got the caller from 336. Normally we go to you guys and then you can come in. We got three callers on the line. So we first go to the caller from 336. What were you saying about Trump's wall? Go ahead.
Yes, I was saying, do you think Donald Trump will build a wall over Mexico and U.S.?
There's no way.
Across.
If he personally pays for it.
There's no way.
That's the thing, is that, you know, Trump...
Unless he hires illegals from across the border, there's no way.
That's the thing, dude, is that you know, we're talking about a candidate that's going to be opposed at every angle, you know, and will he get the wall built? I can't see it happening unless he could do it by executive order, which I don't think is possible. You know, it's hard to say what will happen when Trump gets in. Looking at these rallies, I mean, there's a lot of electricity in these rallies. There's a lot of energy, a lot of violence, a lot of hate, you know, and you know, what if it gets to the point where it's like, you know, people go and intimidate people and start hurting people if they don't do what Trump says? I mean, that's the dynamic that we're looking at here. I mean, I don't know. Claire, what do you think?
I think it's entirely possible. I think that, I mean, that is what I'm saying. I did not necessarily think that before I went to that rally, but after being, and it, that wasn't even that bad of a rally. There were like, I don't know, 10 people kicked out, or 10 total times people were kicked out. And it, the energy is just so incredibly negative and dark and heavy and palpable. And you can tell that they will do anything that he says. They'll agree with anything and they'll do anything. And I think that that is the most dangerous part of his being a candidate.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about this a little bit last week about the reasons why Trump is becoming so popular, and we talked about it earlier in the show about the economic factor, and he's talking about why the jobs are going overseas and all that stuff, and he's pretty big, and he's been, you know, relatively strong on trade. I think he's misguided on some things, but he's got good rhetoric on trade, the TPP, NAFTA, jobs, dealing with China and the manufacturing, NAFTA, and all that. You know, he's actually pretty similar to Bernie Sanders on that front. And that message is resonating with voters right now. And those are the people that are out there that may not be the racist people or whatever, but they're out there looking for their own best interest. They're trying to get a paycheck. They're trying to restore their standard of living and that kind of thing. And that's what's resonating. Now, you also have the people, obviously, that we've seen from some of these videos that are the closet racists that have now come out of the woodwork because of the stuff that Trump has been saying about Muslims and about Hispanics and you know, all the other people that he's singled out. And so you got the racist contingent. Now, the other contingent here, and I think this is where, Claire, what you're talking about kind of comes into factor is, you know, for the longest time, Americans have been kind of pushed towards this pop culture, reality TV kind of worshiping culture, right? And now it's like, you know, reality TV is like this huge deal and everybody watches it. And Trump was a big part of that. Trump had that show, The Celebrity Apprentice, and he was like famous for like firing people and that kind of thing. So, you know, you got the I don't know what to call it, I guess the establishment as a whole, pushing people, dumbing us down with this crappy entertainment stuff, reality TV. Trump kind of got a bunch of experience by having his own show. And now he's harnessed that, all that experience, and he's harnessed it into a political movement. So what you're seeing here is, like, obviously the political establishment doesn't want Trump to be the president, but it's that same political establishment that has been pushing us towards this dumbed down reality TV, entertainment, infomercial lifestyle. And now Trump is a product of that, and that's why he's so good, I think, at captivating people with his, you know, with his antics and stuff, is because it's just like running a reality TV program. He knows how to get ratings. You know what I mean?
He's a straw candidate too. I mean, what's to say he just doesn't back out at the end?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, who knows what this guy's capable of? But I think he is going to try to become president. I think his ego is so big that he's going to try to win.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're gonna have to wait.
Oh, he will win.
Let's take a couple. Let's go to a couple more callers here. We got the caller from 817. How's it going? You're on the line with the Anti-Media Radio. So what do you make of this Trump phenomenon?
Well, this Trump person, he's gonna win regardless. Sources that I've talked to already established that. So this thing is gonna happen. Now everybody just everything's gonna get more professional now, and with time, you'll see that slowly this guy will be our next president.
I mean, I don't doubt that. I really don't. I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that he could completely obliterate Hillary Clinton.
Now, here's the thing. The people that will survive will be the people that can survive. The people that, you know, can support themselves, that don't really rely on the government. And a lot of those people might be, what do you call, depopulated in a way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this. There's no telling what could happen. I mean, looking at the outside of, at these Trump rallies, I mean,
if you've noticed within 10 years, the cost of food has gone up, I don't know, 500 times within 10 years. Now, just think about that. Now, the cost of living is going to be a lot higher, and only the rich will be able to survive in this country.
Yeah, I mean, we're already getting to that point, you know? And, you know, that's why Bernie Sanders is tapping into such a, you know, such a base there. And I, you know, I think you're, you know, if you look outside, if you look at these...
Everything's already in play.
If you look at these Trump rallies, there's already like little mini civil wars going on outside of these things. And Claire, can you tell us a little bit about that?
And these supporters, how I see it, they're going to support him till after he's president, and he's just going to have a giant support of these supporters actually support him, and then he's going to have their back, like saying that he's going to pay for their, you know, all these supporters, I guess, their legal troubles and whatever they get into. He's a billionaire. He can mafia the whole U.S. government, which is it's already happening, but he's going to do it his way.
Yes.
Everybody gets their chance.
The Donald Trump revolution, I don't know if I want to be a part of it. Claire, I mean, what do you make of this? These little civil wars going on outside of this guy's protests.
Well, I don't even know what to say anymore. I mean, there is an article now circulating that there was this group of civilians decided to form an armed guard to protect Trump supporters at his rallies. I guess the Twitter account and the Facebook site were like promptly taken down because they got threats, I guess, direct threats to their families. But so now that's a possibility. So there'll be like armed civilian guards at Trump rallies, which
they're
already heated atmosphere. I just don't see this ending well.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting crazy. I mean, Trump's going to have his own militia out there armed up to the teeth. I mean, it's going to be really, really interesting to see how this plays out. I think people that are paying close attention, hopefully everyone listening to the show tonight, can kind of see the similarities between what's going on here in the United States with what has gone on in the past with fascism. You know, fascism has been a relatively popular political ideology. I mean, it's only in the modern era, it's only surpassed maybe by like capitalism and socialism and communism. Fascism has been tried and used plenty of times. In fact, you know, there's countries right now that are still operating under a fascist and we're the United States may not be completely fascist right now, but it's already an oligarchy. It wouldn't be that big of a dramatic shift to have Trump come in and turn it into a fascist kind of state.
Well, and fascism tends to rise when there's a great deal of inequality or a huge gap in wealth, and you know, just exactly like conditions like right now. So
exactly, and that's, you know, that's the thing that you know, that's what we're dealing with right now in the United States. Huge inequality, huge gap of wealth, extremely rich people controlling everything, and you got Trump and you have these populist candidates, Trump and Sanders, really getting a lot of resonating really well with people, and for better or for worse, it's happening. So people that are wise to the situation need to be paying attention and make proper arrangements. As to what to do, contingency plans for what to do if this thing pans out with Trump or, you know, whatever happens, we got to be aware of it and have a little foresight. I don't want to scare anybody, but, you know, we got to keep that in mind. Caller from 817, thank you for calling in. Feel free to continue listening over at theantimedia.org/radio. Thanks for your call. We got to go to this other call here from 818. How's it going? You're on the Antimedia. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, yeah, I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Really well. Well.
It's pretty interesting listening to all you guys. You know, the kind of input from me is that Trump is not going to be an emperor of this country, even if he wins it, because this is a democracy and a republic, primarily. So even if he wins, he can't do much changes in terms of fascism or anything like that. He's probably going to propose some things, probably some blunt stuff that the Congress might not accept. And then it has to go through all the bureaucracy and everything. And then he's not going to be much problem. But his concept and then his way of handling the government, his policies are going to be definitely different from how the rest of the governments were in the past 20 years. So that's what I think. And then the second thing I want to say is Trump is not winning by himself. The people are voting for Trump. And then there are I've been watching Trump's Facebook page, and then he was at 5 million followers a few months ago, and then now he's at 6.3 million. So that means a lot of people are liking him right now. As time is going, they're liking him right now. And there's a reason for that. The reason for that, what I think is that every time he says something, there are splinter groups of people with different attitudes and different opinions and different alignments. Let's say some people for Bernie, some people for Hillary, some people in the middle kind of go here and there. So everybody's watching him, and then he's appealing to each of those people part by part as time's going, and then they're shifting towards Trump for some reason. So in case the other candidates want to win over him, they have to win through the positive end, and they have to not attack him. Because if they attack him, people on the edge or on the ledge, they're gonna think that something's good with Trump, and then they're gonna go towards him, and then they don't have any other choice, because the more they attack Trump, the less they talk about themselves. So that's one problem I've been observing, but I don't know how to fix it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I heard Ted Cruz today, an audio clip where literally what his platform has become: hey, if you don't want Trump to win, vote for me. Like, that literally has become his platform, because Trump has kind of sucked all the air out of the room with all these fiascos and all these things and all these PR stunts that he's doing. And again, it goes back to his harnessing of the reality TV kind of culture that the United States has been pushed into. And he's a master at his craft. I mean, you gotta give Trump the credit. I mean, I can't stand the shit he's saying. I can't stand the hate that he's stirring up. I can't stand the fact that, I think racism in this country. I was talking to a friend a couple of days ago, and we were talking about how racism is kind of like a fire, you know, and it was kind of like one of these. It was like a fire where like the coals were like slowly starting to burn out, and I think, you know, over a couple of decades we would see like racism slowly start to overturn. But now Hitler is basically pouring lighter fluid on this fire and inflaming it. And now, you know, these other candidates are literally the only thing they're running on is like, we're not Trump, so vote for me. And it's like, there's like no other thing in there. And, you know, Trump has mastered what he's doing. He's doing, and as much as I hate to say it, he's doing a great job at giving red meat to this reality TV dumbed down American population. And I, you know, I'm part of the American population too, but I can't stand seeing my fellow people out there supporting this guy and yelling obscenities at minorities at his rallies and things like that. It's just like, dude, like, you guys gotta, yeah, you're mad about your economic situation, but you gotta really give some thought to what you guys are out there saying. And it is kind of disheartening to see people stoop to that level. But, you know, as you mentioned, it's not Trump on his own. I mean, yeah, he's a gifted politician. He's stirring up a bunch of stuff. But the people were there. I mean, there was a bunch of racists. There's a bunch of people out there that are worried about their paycheck. There's a bunch of people that are, you know, falling
victim. And we got to agree. And we got to agree that if you go to Trump's page and if you see it, there are a lot of there are various demographics on his page. There are Hispanics, there are Indians, there are other people that love Trump. They absolutely love Trump for some reason. There's some reason that they're getting appeal to it, and then you got to accept it that he's also catering to that kind of demographic. So you got to some great guy said, the truth will set you free. So if we accept that truth, but some people from all demographics are accepting Trump in some way or the other candidates can find a way to counter him and then bring his numbers down. Or if we group a particular demographic against Trump, that's not going to be the way, because some people from all demographics are loving Trump. So that's one thing that needs to be recognized. And then we got to educate them in a way. We got to tell them, oh, this is not it. This is not what you think it is. We got to show them the documents, truth, and they're going to probably change their minds. But there are people from all demographics, certain percentage of all demographics that love Trump. That's the truth.
Yeah, you know, very interesting. I want to go back to some of the comments you mentioned at the beginning of your call about the fact that the United States is at least in theory, a democratic republic. And that, you know, Trump's got to go through all the loops and jump over all the barriers to get the things done that he wants to get done. Now, I just want to remind everybody out there listening that, you know, Hitler and the Nazis pretty much came to power democratically, you know, and they came through votes. In fact, Hitler received 11 million votes for president in Germany, I think, back when was this, 1932, something like that. you know, and Hitler made his way into the government democratically, and then he kind of exploited things that went down while he was in government to consolidate his power. You know, I don't know what Trump's plans are, and it's you know, we can't predict the future too well. We can kind of see, you know, the trends that are going on, but I definitely could see where something were to happen, like 9/11 type of thing were to happen again, similar to what happened with the Reichstag in Germany, which obviously people familiar with it turned out to be a false flag. The Nazis set the fire, blamed it on the communists, and that's how the Nazis were able to consolidate power. I mean, if something like that happened, you know, I could see definitely Trump coming to power democratically and then, you know, consolidating power and turning it into much more of a strong executive. I mean, the Bush and the Obama administration have shifted much more power to the executive through democratic means or through, you know, maybe not democratic, maybe through executive fiat, or maybe just by bypassing the laws. And who's going to prosecute a president? You know what I'm saying? A sitting president, you know. And so if Trump does get in, it opens a whole new can of worms of, you know, he gets in democratically and then what, you know what I mean? And so that's another thing that we have to be very wary of. And that's why I'm not, you know, I'm not super, super worried, because of the fact that Trump already has this existential opposition. He's not even elected yet. And people are already disrupting his rallies. They're already shutting him down. They're already protesting him, you know? So that I see as something that gives us a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, where it's like, okay, maybe if he does get in, you know, he's going to be stopped, or he won't be able to do any of this shit that he's talking about doing. And so maybe that's a positive thing. Again, that's where I go back to the Hillary Clinton scenario. And this is what sucks here with this election, is that we don't really have a good option as far as what we're being presented right now, because what we're being presented is Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. And that's pretty much like, you know, this is what's being presented to us. And if that's the case, we don't have great options. I want to get a last comment from the caller from 818. What do you think about Hillary Clinton?
I think Hillary Clinton has a very good experience in being in the Congress, and then she knows a lot of things and everything. I see some criticism from some media sources on her emails and everything, but I don't think, I mean, as long as the investigation goes on, I think the United States is a great country, and I think all the agencies in the United States, they do a great job at a certain extent than many other countries. So I think it will take its course, but politically, I think Hillary Clinton is going to be a good competitor to Donald Trump if he's going to be the nominee. So. Bernie Sanders as well. I mean, I love the way he approaches people. 90% of the commentary that I hear on him is for him. So it's not. Well, I only hear 10% of the commentary against him, but he's doing a good job as well. So, I mean, whoever comes up on the Democratic side, I think from the numbers that we see, I think it's going to be Donald Trump versus somebody over there. So it's neck to neck on the Democratic side from what I see. So it's pretty interesting going so far.
Caller fan 818, thank you for calling in. We appreciate the call. We're going to have to move on here. So, you know, very interesting call. What do you guys think of this comparison to the way Hitler came to power and the way, you know, Trump is rising? DB, what do you make of it?
I mean, the parallels are there. But that last caller threw me off, because it's crazy that people still consider her a viable alternative at all. She's completely unelectable. She's corrupt to the core, and she cost thousands, if not millions, of lives. Libya doesn't happen without her. That's what those emails are about. They're not nothing. She ran a State Department inside the State Department and directly resulted in millions of deaths. So we can talk about Trump becoming Hitler, but we have somebody that's directly responsible right now trying to get in.
Yeah, you know, and that's the point that I've made before too, is you know, Trump has been showing these tendencies, but Clinton has not only shown the tendency, but has shown the track record of doing bad things. I mean, Libya, overthrowing the government there. I mean, recently we found out that she was one of the straw that broke the camel's back. Obama didn't want to do it, really. And it was Hillary Clinton's forceful, you know, advisories that basically said, hey, look, let's go topple the government of Muammar Gaddafi, and we're going to make Libya a better place. Obviously, anyone paying attention to what's been going on in Libya knows that that's not exactly what happened. Libya is now in a very rough spot. ISIS is gaining a major foothold. I mean, there's dozens. Go ahead.
Honduras now, you know, and that's becoming to the forefront. It's a failed state directly as a result of these Banana Republic-type United Fruit companies going in and TPPing people out of the way and literally killing people in opposition to people coming in and selling out the natural resources out from the people. So she's part of it. She's a globalist. She's probably worse than Trump, honestly, if you really break it down.
Yeah, you know, Clinton comes from the cloth of neoconservative foreign policy. She's a Monroe Doctrine supporter. I mean, she's the type that's like, let's topple any government in Latin America that doesn't agree with us. As you mentioned, DB, Honduras was her most recent outing in Latin America, which has turned Honduras into pretty much the most violent country in the Western Hemisphere. And then, you know, we sit here and we wonder about this immigration crisis. And we're like, well, why are all these people? Everyone thinks it's like people from Mexico coming up. I mean, the last time I checked, there's actually more people from Mexico leaving the United States than coming in. A lot of these refugees, I call them refugees. Other people may call them immigrants, and people that don't know what the hell they're talking about call them illegal aliens. But people are coming from Honduras because Hillary Clinton backed the overthrow of their government in 2009. And so people are getting the hell out of there because it now has become one of the most violent countries in the world. You know what I mean? And so people need to really pay attention. It's so easy for people that are supporting Trump to say, oh, yeah, we got to kick all these Hispanics out of the country. They're over here taking our jobs. It's like, you know what? They may be taking some jobs, but we helped take their entire country. We overthrew it. You know, Hillary Clinton is partly responsible for that.
I think it's important to mention, too, that people make a mistake very frequently because we've become such a two-party, like, diametrically opposed system. If you know, somebody criticizes Trump does not mean they necessarily approve of either Sanders or Hillary or anybody else for that matter. It's not that way. It's these candidates are all very bad candidates. There are many, many things wrong with many of them. And just because somebody, you know, making a comparison of Trump and Hitler does not mean that Hillary doesn't also fit the bill.
And there's no such thing as small government. Let's just be really honest about it. So if we're going to continue with what we have, which is really, really rich people making the decisions, then vote for one of the establishment people. If you want to take a risk, something possibly could happen positive, you go with Sanders, hopefully. We don't have to tear it down that way. But if you really, really want to just tear things down, go with Trump.
There you go.
Seriously, if you want Biff Tannen to run this country, go.
There's one way to look at this whole thing. Oh, man, it's crazy. It is. It's really crazy. This may be the most consequential election the United States has faced. plenty of people have talked about the state of America. Ron Paul, former CIA advisors, have, you know, recently talked about how the empire is kind of caving in on itself, you know, and so this could be very much the most consequential election.
We're running out of natural resources, Nick. That's basically what I've been reading up on, is that China and Russia together would literally just outproduce us, similar to the way we outproduced everyone else in World War II. And we're not talking about planes and tanks, but drones, you know what I mean? Just endless waves back and forth. Who has the most metal and the most rare earth materials? That's why I don't think that people understand, like, the new war is not going to be like all this World War II stuff. So that's kind of what we're gearing up towards. That's why we invaded the Middle East. We need the oil. We need all this stuff for the future.
Yeah, and the Middle East is still in a mess. We do got a little bit of positive news out of the Middle East tonight.
Russia.
Apparently, yeah. Apparently, Russia is at least pulling most of its ground forces out of Syria, and so that's a bit of a positive thing. There's been a ceasefire in Syria that's been holding. I mean, there's been violations of the ceasefire and that all that.
What do you think the plan is strategically, Nick, for Putin to pull out the majority of the forces but leave about 5%, make it look like there's a little contingent? You think he's trying to draw Turkey and maybe Saudi Arabia if they're stupid enough to come in?
I'm not sure. I'm not really sure. It's hard to say. I mean, at face value, it looks like maybe the ceasefire is holding, and he's doing it as a symbolic thing to try to say, hey, look, we believe in the ceasefire. Maybe we can bring an end to the onslaught. Because, you know, this thing in Syria, it's so complicated. to look at and think of it. You know, the U.S. has been over there bombing for so long. And this is something I really wanted to bring up tonight in the show. Past all this election stuff, and God, you know, it's Monday and it was a long weekend for politics, so we had to talk about it. I hate talking about that crap. I don't like talking about Trump and Hillary and all that shit, but we have to. This foreign policy stuff, which very much it supersedes elections, but it doesn't matter which party or which candidate's involved. The foreign policy stuff is going to continue rolling on, and it's going to, you know, we're going to have to just play this like play by play. Russia went in, and they were much more honest about what they were doing in Syria. And from the very beginning, they've been backing the Syrian government against the attempts at regime change. Many people say that it's a legitimate revolution. I think that at least it started as a legitimate a revolution. It was later hijacked by the U.S. and by Saudi Arabia, the Sunni states, and all that to try to get Assad out of the way for their own geopolitical interests and that kind of thing. And they've been open about that. ISIS, according to documents leaked, Claire actually covered this. ISIS is a creation of U.S. foreign policy, Saudi Arabian foreign policy, and you know they ended up getting out of control. Very, very much in the same vein that Osama bin Laden was a creation of U.S. foreign policy, and then he got out of control. ISIS is very much the same kind of thing. And so the thing that I see here, the difference between what's going on with the U.S. involvement in Syria and the Russian involvement, is that the U.S. went about it in a very backhanded way. You know, we helped create ISIS to try to destabilize the Syrian government, but we never were open about it. We never said, hey, look, we're going to go create this militant group so that they can go overthrow the Syrian government. And we weren't open, and we couldn't go and supply them openly. We couldn't go launch airstrikes in favor of them openly. We had to do it in this weird backhanded way. And then what happened was ISIS got out of control. And then now they don't answer to anybody, not even Saudi Arabia. You know what I mean? Now, Russia, on the other hand, and we're not trying to make any excuses here for Vladimir Putin or for Russia or anything like that, but they were much more open, more honest about what they're doing. They're going over there to support the Syrian government, which is a dictatorship, and they're going to bomb anybody that's threatening that government. And that's what they did, and they bombed the shit out of them, and it turned the tide in the war, and now Russia is able to pull their forces out because they feel confident in the Syrian government being able to handle it on their own. You know, and that's probably – that to me, that's what I see happening. And for the U.S., you know, we've been involved over there now for much, much longer – I mean, than the Russians have. We've been involved there for well over a year. The Russians were only there since like September. They were only there for like 4 or 5 months. And so, you know, they did what they had to do. They were pretty much open and honest about what they were going to do. They were going to go bomb anybody that was against the Syrian government who they designated as terrorists, and that's what they did. And then they did what they had to do, and they got out. Now for us, it's a little more backhanded where we're like, oh, well, we're walking this line where it's like we want to fight terrorism, but we also want to overthrow the Syrian government, but we can't. We don't want to bomb directly against the Syrian government.
We want to build that pipeline.
Exactly. And so like the U.S. has been tiptoeing around because it's not popular with the American public. It's like, hey, we're going to go just overthrow a country. That's not popular anymore, you know. And so they have to go tiptoe around and like say, oh, we're supporting the opposition, we're supporting these democratic rebels and stuff. And that narrative like fell apart. And so like there's very little standing, very little ground to stand on with like supporting the moderate opposition, because the opposition, unfortunately, in Syria, they're not very moderate. Most of them are pretty much Islamist. They would implement Sharia law if they came to power. And hell, if the Syrian government fell, ISIS would probably become the most powerful group in Syria anyway. And so that's the difference. You know, the Russians were able to go in. They were honest. They're like, look, we're going to bomb people. We're going to do this to support this government. And that's what we're going to do. The U.S. is like, well, we're going to like bomb, but we're not going to support ISIS. And we're not going to like bomb it directly against the government. We're going to like tiptoe around it. And that's why we've seen this protracted conflict over there, where like now 250,000 people are dead, almost 10 million people have been displaced out of their homes in Syria because the U.S. is not wanting to be honest about their goals in the region. And so this is a really sad scenario, what's going on now. I'm hoping that this peace holds. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe the Kurds will get their own autonomous region. I saw some chatter about that over on Middle Eastern Eye, and maybe the Kurds will get their own federal region over there and they get their own autonomous zone. The Turks are obviously going to be against that. The Turks have been bombing the Kurds like this whole time. And so, you know, Turkey is really like the real thorn over there besides Israel. Turkey and Israel and Saudi Arabia are really the thorns in any prospects of peace in the Middle East, because they've got their own geopolitical interests that they're trying to establish. You know, Israel's got its self-interest. Saudi Arabia's got its eye on supplying Europe with natural gas and oil and that kind of thing. Russia's already doing that, and so they want to protect their interests. The U.S. is over there making tons of money off of selling arms to these people, and they've got their own natural gas interests in the region and stuff like that. So it's a huge economic mess, and the most unfortunate part of it is that the Syrian people are the ones paying the ultimate price. They're the ones dying over these wars that are basically based on greed and based on resources and that kind of thing. So it's really, really, really sad scenario what's going on over there. Let's talk about some other stuff here, because there's some other stories that we have on the anti-media. Anyone listening tonight, make sure you go over to theantimedia.org. We're not able to touch on everything we cover. We've been posting a lot of stories lately, like over 10 a day, basically. So you can go there, and we're aggregating from all the best alternative news websites. Fukushima is still going on. Robots dying, trying to get into these reactors. I mean, this is nuclear power has just been something that's been leaking everywhere lately. That we need to pay attention to. I mean, this is it's bad. I mean, every nuclear reactor is leaking pretty much, and so we got to pay attention to that. Renewable energy is now economically viable, so there's no reason why we don't start making the shift over and you know, start rethinking the way we get our power, because that's one thing that we need to do if we're going to talk about being sustainable, not destroying the earth and that kind of thing. We got some other stuff about the CIA. I mean, apparently Obama is actually afraid of the CIA. I guess that's not huge news to people that know what's going on. But a former CIA analyst, Ray McGovern, basically was talking about how Obama is not able to do the things that he said he was going to do. And, you know, who knows what Obama's true intentions are and stuff. But the CIA keeps him in check, you know. And so the CIA is like one of these organizations that's not doesn't really answer to anybody. They do what they want. They've got dirt on like everyone. They've got leverage on everyone. It's a really bad, bad thing. The CIA is more Nazi-like than Hitler. Not Hitler. The CIA is more Nazi-like than Trump. You know what I mean? And so we've already got the symptoms here. We've already got the issues that Trump is now really making people worried about. We've already got that shit going. I mean, the CIA is already there. I saw a tweet from Trump over the weekend where he was talking about the Secret Service. And, you know, the Nazis had the SS, and we got the Secret Service, which coincidentally the initials are SS as well. Trump made a tweet that was praising the USSS, the U.S. Secret Service, but he abbreviated it down to the USSS. And that was like, to me, I was like, oh, damn. And I was like, I read that, and I was like, oh, we already got the SS here in the United States. We already got the Secret Service. It was the secret police over there in Germany, the Gestapo that they had and stuff. And then they had their, you know, the SS was like this really hardcore militia kind of. We've already got that stuff, dude. And as Claire was mentioning, you know, people are starting to make militias for Trump now, too. Claire, you still there? I think we lost Claire. I don't know what happened there. But yeah, I mean, this stuff, it's crazy. So we're going to, everyone, be vigilant, I guess I can say. Keep an eye out what's going on. Make sure that you're ahead of the game here. And thankfully, if you're listening tonight, you're already a bit ahead of the game. And, you know, be like Einstein and get the hell out before shit gets that bad. Let's try to prevent it from happening. But when it gets to that point where if it gets to that point, like, be like Einstein, get out before it's too late. You don't want to wind up, you don't want to have that fate where you're getting the short end of the stick here. Anyway, that's pretty much it for the show tonight. Thank you all for tuning in. Remember, the Anti-Media Radio is Monday through Friday at the same place, the same time, theantimedia.org/radio. And we're going to be having some guests on Wednesday. Whole different show. Hopefully we won't have to talk so much about Trump and Clinton, because I can't stand talking about them. But anyway, Peace out. Thank you all for tuning in.
Later. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.